Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Nartrees Podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. The Control of Nature is John McPhee's 1989 work of literary nonfiction about human attempts to manage forces that are larger, older, and less predictable than the systems built to contain them, drawn from three long essays first published in The New Yorker. The book examines the old river control structure in Louisiana, emergency lava diversion during the 1973 Elbfell eruption in Iceland, and debris flows descending from the San Gabriel Mountains into the Los Angeles Basin. McPhee does not write a policy manual or a simple environmental warning. Instead, he combines field reporting, geology, hydrology, engineering explanation, and portraits of working specialists to show how control is pursued in practice. The book's purpose is to make visible the technical ingenuity and philosophical tension behind projects that defend human settlements from rivers, volcanoes, and mountains. Its central interest lies in the uneasy boundary between necessary intervention and the enduring autonomy of natural processes. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, the Atchafalaya case shows control as a permanent obligation rather than a completed achievement. The opening section, Atchafalaya, centers on the Mississippi River system and the federal effort to prevent the river from shifting its main course into the Atchafalaya Basin. The old river control structure is not presented as a triumphant conquest of water, but as a continuing act of resistance against hydraulic logic. The Mississippi carries sediment, seeks steeper gradients, and responds to floods in ways that make channel change a natural possibility. Human infrastructure interrupts that tendency because cities, ports, industries, farms, and navigation systems have been built around the river, remaining where people expect it to remain. McPhee's treatment is important because it reframes engineering as maintenance under pressure. The structure is not simply a dam or gate. It is part of a political and economic decision to preserve a landscape organized by human investment. The reasoning in the book is concrete control creates dependency. Once a society commits to holding a river in place, it must keep investing in inspection, repair, prediction, and emergency response. Nature is not defeated. It is held in a negotiated condition that may last only as long as the institutions and structures remain effective. Secondly, the Iceland lava response highlights improvisation under geological urgency. Cooling the Lava examines the 1973 eruption of Eldfell on Hæmi, where lava threatened a harbor central to the island's fishing economy. The episode differs from the Louisiana case because the response was not the long-term management of a known river system, but a rapid attempt to alter an active volcanic event. Icelanders pumped seawater onto advancing lava in order to cool, harden, and slow it. McPhee uses this case to show that control can be experimental, local, and provisional, rather than massive and bureaucratic. The intervention succeeded in helping protect the harbor, but the book does not reduce the event to a simple story of human victory. Its significance lies in the combination of scientific understanding, practical improvisation, and communal necessity. Lava is not persuaded by intention. It changes behavior only when heat, mass, slope, and cooling are altered enough to matter. McPhee's account makes the engineering intelligible by connecting it to physical processes rather than heroic abstraction. The Iceland section therefore broadens the book's argument control sometimes works, but it works within narrow conditions created by geography, timing, material behavior, and the willingness of people to act before certainty is available. Thirdly, Los Angeles reveals the risk of building permanent wealth beside unstable mountains. Los Angeles, against the mountain studies debris, flows from the San Gabriel Mountains, where steep slopes, fractured rock, fire, storms, and gravity combine to send destructive material into developed neighborhoods. This section is especially revealing because the hazard is not rare in the abstract. It is built into the region's geology and climate. McPhee shows that Southern California's appeal as a place to live intersects with processes that make foothill settlement vulnerable. Debris basins, channels, walls, and other public works are designed to intercept or redirect flows, but they do not remove the underlying mechanism. The mountains continue to erode, fires continue to strip vegetation, and intense rains continue to mobilize sediment. The reasoning here is less about a single spectacular disaster than about land use and expectation. When homes are built in zones shaped by recurrent natural movement, engineering becomes a way of sustaining a chosen pattern of settlement. McPhee's analysis is valuable because it avoids treating disaster as mere surprise. It shows how risk accumulates when scenic desirability, real estate value, and confidence in public works encourage people to inhabit places where the landscape is still actively constructing and dismantling itself. Fourthly, McPhee explains technical systems through observed people, places, and material processes. A defining feature of the control of nature is its method. McPhee does not separate science from human context, nor does he rely on technical exposition alone. He moves between field observation, Expert explanation, historical background, and the daily work of engineers, geologists, officials, residents, and laborers. This narrative strategy matters because the book's subject could easily become abstract. Terms such as sediment load, lava cooling, channel control, or debris flow gain meaning when attached to specific landscapes and decisions. McPhee's style is careful rather than polemical. He often lets physical detail and professional practice carry the argument. Readers come to understand not only what was built or attempted, but why intelligent people believed intervention was necessary. The book's reasoning depends on this balance. If nature were described only as overwhelming, human action would seem foolish. If engineering were described only as competent, the natural systems would seem manageable. By presenting both the competence of human actors and the scale of the forces they face, McPhee creates a more exact form of environmental nonfiction, one that respects expertise while refusing to confuse expertise with mastery. Lastly, the book questions domination without dismissing the necessity of intervention. The control of nature is often remembered for its implicit skepticism toward the idea that nature can be conquered. But its position is more nuanced than a simple anti-engineering argument. In all three cases, people intervene because the alternative may be economic loss, destroyed homes, damaged infrastructure, or the collapse of a community's way of life. McPhee's title points toward an ambition embedded in modern engineering culture, yet the book repeatedly shows that control is conditional and costly. The Mississippi must be monitored, lava can be influenced only during a particular window, and Los Angeles can reduce but not abolish mountain hazards. The important distinction is between intervention as practical necessity and domination as ideology. McPhee is interested in the moment when successful control encourages the belief that natural systems have become subordinate to human plans. The book complicates that belief by showing that every intervention operates inside larger geological, hydrological, and climatic systems. Its intellectual force comes from refusing easy judgment. It recognizes the ingenuity and courage behind control projects, while making clear that their achievements are temporary, situated, and dependent on continued attention. In conclusion, The Control of Nature is best suited to readers interested in environmental history, geology, civil engineering, risk, infrastructure, and narrative nonfiction. It will also appeal to readers who want science writing that is concrete rather than speculative, because McPhee builds understanding through places, mechanisms, and observed professional practice. The practical benefit of the book is a clearer sense of how flood control, volcanic response, debris management, and land development involve trade-offs rather than final solutions. It helps readers see infrastructure not as a background convenience, but as an active, fragile negotiation with physical forces. Intellectually, the book encourages skepticism toward both technological arrogance and simplistic rejection of engineering. Compared with many environmental books, it stands out because it does not begin with a thesis and then gather examples to prove it. McPhee's strength is patient reporting. He lets each case develop through its own geography, history, and technical constraints. Compared with conventional popular science, it is more literary and character-rich. Compared with advocacy writing, it is more observational and less prescriptive. Its distinctive value lies in showing that human beings may have no choice but to resist nature in particular places, while also showing that such resistance is never the same as possession, command, or permanence. If you would like to support John McPhee, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.